Alex here to tell you about the latest show on the Midwest Podcast Network, The Alienist Recap. Each week, we recap the latest episode of TNT's The Alienist, a show adapted from the book by author Caleb Carr. The show airs at 9 p.m. Eastern on Mondays on TNT. Here's Nick with the synopsis of the show.
Set in New York City in 1896, a journalist and an investigative team assembled by Police Commissioner Teddy Roosevelt try to solve a series of murders.
Find new episodes of The Alienist Recap on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and more on the Wednesday after the show airs. We hope you'll join us as we journey into the mind of a killer.
Welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am one of your hosts, Tim Long, and I am joined by one Mr.
Willie Gibbs.
Willie, how's it going?
It's good.
Good.
It's good.
Good.
Yeah, this episode's coming a week later than normally it would come.
Yeah.
That was a really weird way to say that. It's a week later than usual.
Yeah, we're rusty, don't worry.
People
will forgive us.
Yeah, we apologize for the rustiness and the lateness.
Yeah.
We hope we have a wonderful episode. We think we have a wonderful episode here for you today.
I think we're good, yeah.
Yeah, and you might notice a little bit of a change in format. It's not crazy different, but in this instance, we're just doing one film.
Yes.
Instead of a few. There are multiple reasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you like hate it and want us to just cut it out, then let us know, and we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
But we think you'll love it.
I think you will, too. I think it's going to be cleaner. I think it's tweaking it a little. And I also think it will give people that maybe want to watch along with us a better shot at watching along with us instead of having to pound in three movies.
Yeah. And you know, here's the thing. This switching to, and I'm not saying we'll never do a two or three movie, you know, year again. We could totally do that. This means that we'll be able to revisit years more often, which is fun. It means that, quite frankly, it'll be good for the longevity of the show, because eventually we're going to run out of movies, right?
Never.
Well,
yes.
We'll figure it out. But this'll make it, you know, it'll make the show last longer, we think. And we can get a little more in-depth with a movie. You know, we don't feel like maybe we have to jump to multiple movies, like, oh, crap, we're...
Right.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a good thing. But let us know. Like, send us feedback and let us know. I think that's important.
Where can they send us feedback, Willie?
They can email us like a long form question or comment or whatever. We're horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. You could always send us a message on Facebook or just post on our wall, facebook.com/horrormovieyearbook. Or you can tweet at us at @HMYearbook on Twitter. Any of those will work for sure. So,
cool. Yeah, let us know what you think. Like it, love it.
Yeah.
Want some more of it?
Yeah, there you go.
And while you're at it, while you're on the internet, check out a couple of our other shows. Not Willie and I's other shows.
Well, we should say part of the Midwest
of the
Podcast Network.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful, we have a wonderful series of sister shows that are currently running.
Mm-hmm.
We got a newer one.
Yes, the Alienist Recap.
Yeah. What's that all about?
Alex and Nick from, they did the Westworld FM.
Yep.
And what's the other show they did?
They did Gone
to
Texas,
Preacher.
The Preacher.
They do Preacher.
Show, yeah.
Yep. They are watching The Alienist right now. The Alienist.
They are not, you know, if you want them to go back and watch old episodes of Alias, though.
Right in.
We can make this happen.
They're watching The Alienist on TNT. It's called The Alienist Recap, so it should be easy to find on iTunes. This week, they're covering episode 2, A Fruitful Partnership.
Ooh.
Ooh la la. Hey, and while you're at it, check out their other show, Westworld FM, because judging by the Super Bowl commercial, Westworld will be coming back soon.
It's coming back soon.
So I think you've got a couple months to catch up there,
yep.
And there's no better way to catch up with old episodes than by binging it and then listening to a podcast about it.
Yeah.
I've done it before, too. I enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I have a lot of fun with that.
Yes. And they are experts on Westworld and The Alienist.
Uh-huh.
So one last podcast we got here, the Midwest Game Nerds podcast. They are on episode 78. They're doing Sea of Thieves beta.
Okay.
Looks like a game about pirates.
Yeah, it's like a pirate ship simulator. It looks really neat, actually.
Is this like a console game?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. It kind of looks like a mobile game from the cover.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought it was
a
console game.
No, you're probably right. I think the cover just kind of looks like it. And The Inpatient, you know a little bit about that one, right?
It's a prequel to Until Dawn.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yes, which okay. I loved Until Dawn.
Okay.
But the only thing about The Inpatient that bums me out, personally, is that I like VR. I think it's a cool technology. The game is only available using the VR.
Is this a VR one?
It's a VR only, which is kind of a bummer because I'm not going to buy a VR equipment myself, personally. If for those that listen to the show, you know, I just bought a house, got a baby on the way. I can't afford no VR.
No.
If you want to send me some VR, like tech, I'll gladly take it, but I will not go out and purchase it on my own. Perhaps what I will do realistically is just go over to Alex's and play some Inpatient on his PlayStation.
Because you played the Resident Evil game on VR, right?
I played some of it. Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. It was neat. I like the technology a lot. Yeah.
It's not The Inpatient. I can't remember the name of the game, but Conan O'Brien does Clueless Gamer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did a VR horror one, and all he could do was pick up the charts. And then drop him on the floor, and he just kept doing it over and over.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, picked up the medical charts, dropped it over and over. I think you can probably do more than that in Inpatient.
Yeah, I from what I understand, it's kind of it's like a period piece set in an asylum.
Yep.
Yeah. It looks pretty creepy, so.
The Blackwood Pines Sanatorium,
yep.
To be precise.
Which features heavily in Until Dawn. But in Until Dawn, we see that it's run down and destroyed and, you know, abandoned in the mountains. I think in this game we get to learn what happened.
Okay. Oh, so kind of like a movie we'll be talking about a little bit.
Yeah.
We get to learn the backstory.
Absolutely.
Hopefully it turns out better. I want to start getting into horror video games.
I think you'd dig it.
I think I would, too.
Do you think
I'm just going to turn into John Carpenter as I get older? Just play video games and watch basketball?
I haven't said anything, but you've already started your transition into John Carpenter.
Right.
I can make a few suggestions, and this is not just for Tim, but for some other folks out there. Alien Isolation is really cool.
Is that based on the movies?
No, it's its own plot, but it's kind of based around the idea of the first film, where it's one alien and a group of people that are not trained soldiers. It's not aliens. It's very much Alien.
But it's a part of the Alien franchise.
It absolutely is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's
this is actually
okay.
Ripley's daughter.
Oh.
Who, in between the events of Alien and Aliens, Ripley is missing in cryosleep somewhere in space, and her daughter is a member of a crew, I believe, that's going to search for the missing Nostromo crew.
Okay.
And she's jumped on this to figure out what happened to her mom. Really, really creepy stuff. Very effective. Liked that one a lot. We've talked about Friday the 13th, the game, a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, I think, in a second here. But that's, you know, worth playing a little bit if you haven't played that yet. I know you have, Tim.
It's fun.
I have not played it, but I think you should check out Dead by Daylight, which is another asymmetrical multiplayer game. I believe this one is four survivors and one killer. And they've released a lot of cool DLC.
Oh, is this the one that releases kind of like the Halloween pack?
They released Michael Myers, Laurie Strode, and Haddonfield.
Oh, man.
They just released recently Leatherface.
Oh, man. This is PS4 too, right?
Yes, yeah. They released Leatherface. They also released just recently Freddy Krueger.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cool. So now you've got those, you know, slasher kind of titans to play as. Pretty neat stuff. I haven't played a ton of it. I played a little bit. I hear sometimes the online community can be a little bit hard to work with, but isn't that just kind of online gaming?
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. You're going to get obscenity screamed at you by children that are way too
young. Unless you're playing like Mario Kart.
You'll be okay in Mario Kart.
I mean, they're screaming it, but you can't hear them because Nintendo refuses to.
Exactly.
Do any sort of voice chat.
Probably for the best.
Yeah, probably for the best.
So there's a few examples. Yeah.
Sweet.
Ones to check out.
Well, you mentioned one there. We want to talk about it. We have been playing Friday the 13th, the game, a lot.
Yeah.
We love playing it. I would like to play it a little more. we wanted to give like some updates on our progress on Friday the 13th. It's just so we want to introduce a segment called Friday the 13th, the game we've been playing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did not come up with a name for
it. No, that's
before
a good. That's a good one,
Willie. We've been playing it. We played it the other night. We had a group going. I had to play as quietly as possible because my fiance was asleep next to me, and I could not like say anything to you guys.
It was strange.
It was awkward.
Awkward. You were trying really hard to communicate. We played a bit. I think the inspiration for playing was that they released a new Jason and a new map.
Yes.
So they released our one of our personal favorites.
Yeah, who's the new Jason?
Roy Burns is the new Jason.
So it's not a new Jason.
No.
It's a new Roy.
It's a new Roy. And it's a map from A New Beginning.
Yes.
Which is Roy's installment in the franchise, Pinehurst, the Youth Development Center. A lot of fun running around that. It was the same way I felt when they released the Jarvis House map. It was cool to be able to run around in an environment that I was so familiar with from the film.
Yes.
And be able to like find all the little Easter eggs and stuff hidden. I found the sex blanket, by the way, on the Pinehurst.
Did you?
It's out there, and it's got the guy's jeans laying on it.
I didn't get a chance to wander around as much as I would have liked.
Yeah.
You can wander around that outside of online, right?
Yeah, so they have offline bots available now, and the offline bots are terrible. They're not smart at all, which, I mean, it's like the movies, I guess. I mean, they should be smarter. That's just from a game development standpoint, these bots should be smarter. From a, you know, I mean...
They hide a lot.
They hide a lot?
Yeah,
they do. They crawl under beds and in closets and stuff. They're not very good at like fighting back or running from you.
No.
I've literally watched them jump into closets in front of me. It's funny. yeah, because they'll get in the closet and they're like, I hope he didn't see me. And you're like, clearly you're looking right at him. Usually what I do is I leave and let them go. It's not fun.
They can run back and forth. Just like back and forth every once in a while,
it's
too.
So funny. Sometimes they get caught in this infinite loop of hopping in and out of a window. Anyway, but
which is no different than our friend Alex.
Yes, who does a lot
of
that.
But that's strategy.
It is strategy.
That is a strategic move by Alex.
But yeah, no, it's fun. And we got to play as Roy and play on the new map. Yeah, it's a good time. It, you know, is it a perfect game? No, I think we've said that no. before. Not even close. And there have been more issues with the team and the game than I can even, you know, relay here. But I've had fun.
But they gave us Roy.
They gave us Roy, and for that,
what's
I forgive.
Roy's weapon again?
He uses the
shears, right?
The garden shears.
The garden shears.
The overly giant garden shears.
And oh, you can knock off his mask.
You can
we
knock off
it.
His mask. Yes, and it's Roy. It's a guy. It's a like kind of a schlubby looking dude with like a fake Jason head on. It's really funny.
One thing I hope they fix someday is Jason's mom still talks to him.
Yeah, that's weird. That seems like they wanted to get him out there and they didn't have time to try and figure what it should be, right, is that he starts off like by an ambulance.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And instead of Jason's mom, it's his son Joey talking to him.
Yeah.
And instead of a sweater, you have to use the candy bar. You go to the ambulance, you pull the candy bar off the dash, and you're like, Roy, it's me, Joey. And then he gets like, oh my God, that's the way to do it.
What does Joey say? He says something
to
the dude that's chopping wood. That not chopping wood.
I think you're really out of line.
They have to put that in the game.
Yeah. You can see the axe in the... dug into the wood, which is kind of funny.
You know what? They do a great job with stuff like that.
They do. There's some fun stuff in the backgrounds and stuff. And I like that each Jason has his own music from that movie. They pick like a selected piece from the movie. Yeah, that's cool. It's fun. But no, Joey should be talking to Roy the whole time.
Yes.
Dad. Yeah, it'd be so good.
Perfect. All right, Willie. We're going to move on here.
Okay.
We are going to... One of the other reasons we decided to tweak the format a little bit, we wanted to talk about some new movies.
Yeah. We want to be able to squeeze that in a little bit.
We have, yeah. We've had a lot of fun doing like episodes based around new movies.
Well, it's tough because, I we put the poll up about our 2017 recap show, right? Mm-hmm. And like I looked at that list at the time, and I'm like, God, like it's going to be a while before we're going to be able to get back to any of these,
right?
You know, and there's so many newer ones that I've seen recently that I have opinions on or feelings on and that I want to talk about and kind of discuss with you. And this way, at least we can touch on those movies a little bit. We might come back later and maybe go a little more in depth, but it'll be nice to kind of, I don't know, just to give a brief, you know, vibe about how we felt about it. Maybe make some suggestions. So,
yeah. So I'm going to warn just ahead of time, we might get a little spoilery with both of these movies tonight.
Sure.
I'll try to not spoil specific.
I think
plot
if we can avoid
ending.
Yeah, if we can avoid specifics, but just because of the nature of talking about something, there's a chance that we could even not even spoil something blatantly, but maybe color your perception of the movie while you're watching it or something. And I don't want to do that. So
if you are spoiler phobic, tread carefully is what I'll say.
I would agree.
Because we're going to talk about the Cloverfield Paradox first.
We are going to talk about the Cloverfield Paradox.
Yeah. Just dropped on Netflix a couple days ago from when we were recording.
It sure got dropped.
Yes, it did.
They put out a trailer.
During the Super Bowl?
30-second trailer during the Super Bowl. And then they were like, it's called the Cloverfield Paradox, and it'll be online tonight.
Yeah, now before we get into the movie itself, what do you think of that? How did 10 Cloverfield Lane, how did they do that? Because they just kind of announced it, and then a couple months later it was out?
It was a matter of, I think, weeks even. It was like, they announced it at a comic convention, maybe like a big Comic-Con, and they were like, we're screening it here today for fans, and you can go see it in theaters in like 2 weeks or something, or a month. I don't remember what it was, but it's very quick. I mean, it was like, it didn't take long between the reveal and the release of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's even shorter.
No, this one, it was like, hey, you can watch it. You texted.
Yeah. I was like, hey, Cloverfield's on Netflix tonight.
You're like, it's on after the game. Yeah. Now this has been, because Blair Witch did this, and there's another one too that I think I'm forgetting, but Blair Witch and 10 Cloverfield Lane are the two of the more recent examples. But
yeah, I mean, I've heard of, I guess, Blitz marketing before, but this is pretty.
I like it.
No, I think it's cool, and I'll be honest, I think the reason why they did it here in this way is that the studio wasn't confident in the movie. They sold it to Netflix. Netflix took a look at what they had and said, we don't necessarily want bad word of mouth to hurt our streaming numbers.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of bad word of mouth on this one.
Yeah.
And rightfully so in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Willie, why is there bad word of mouth?
It's not great.
I was so excited when you talked that. Like, I got up, because I watched the game and I went to sleep, and then I got up early the next morning and watched it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was excited too. I mean, and that's the thing, is like, I wasn't nuts about 10 Cloverfield Lane. Oh, and you know what? No, I take it back. I really liked the movie up until kind of the end, last 10 minutes or so, when you kind of get a reveal of what's going on. And I just felt like there was such a shift, and I understood the reason behind it. The more I thought about it, the less angry I was about that. I wanted it to be at the time more tied to the first Cloverfield. I didn't want it to be so standalone. I like the first Cloverfield quite a bit. I think it's one of the better found footage movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it uses found footage effectively to tell a story. I know some people might disagree, but that's how I feel. And I was a little bit bummed that after, 10 years or 8 years, 9 years after the first one, I finally get my air quotes sequel, and it has really nothing to do with Cloverfield, right? So I was a little bit bummed about that. The more I thought about it, I was like, you know, this is cool, because this could be like John Carpenter's original idea for the Halloween series. You know, once a year we'll get this Cloverfield movie, and it'll be like an anthology movie, and it'll maybe have some similarities, like spiritual stuff, but, you know, some like a spiritual successor, if you will. It'll have maybe some shared elements, maybe some alien stuff going on, or some sci-fi stuff going on, some horror. That's cool. I can dig that. Then they do this movie. And this one does kind of tie to the first Cloverfield. Kind of.
Yeah.
And it also,
this is where we might get spoilery, because you might have to explain what happened to this.
Well, it has some ties. Some of the things that happen in this movie include kind of alternate realities and the idea of a scientific experiment that breaks the space-time barrier. We've seen this stuff in film before, in fiction before, that can affect the past, the present, the future, can affect other realities. So basically, the events that take place in this movie, without giving specifics, will essentially provide explanations for any future Cloverfield movie we have. It's kind of a catch-all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And while I appreciate the kind of expediency of that, I don't necessarily know that I needed it. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it's neat. I think it's a neat cheat.
I'm trying to think of there's no question.
Better word. Yeah. But I like it, especially with where they're going with the fourth one.
Sure.
And it explains a problem I had like the entire movie until like it clicked with me that like, oh, everything's a different reality. It's like the time of the first one. Yeah. But it's one of those things where I saw someone posted like, if you sync up the two movies, like 18 minutes in, you'll hear the Cloverfield roar for the first time, the monster roar for the first time when the whatever they do
when the experiment ship,
when the ship goes bad, and I'm like, wow, that's really neat too. Like, make a better movie.
Yeah, no, and that, I think that's the thing is with 10 Cloverfield Lane. I will still argue that some of the stuff that was tacked on felt on. It felt to me like the title was more tacked on than anything else with Cloverfield Lane, right?
Right.
With this one, it feels like large chunks of the script were tacked on to make it a Cloverfield movie.
Yeah.
To me, this script could have, this story could have gone interesting places, and it does some interesting places, but this doesn't feel like a finished script to me. It feels like a first draft that they then went, oh, we can tool this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they released it after, like they filmed it after that second draft where they just threw Cloverfield stuff in there.
Yes. Yeah, because
not great.
There needs to be some tightening up of certain rules in this movie. That was my biggest problem. And I was really excited to watch this in the morning. Like, I got up, and then about halfway through, I'm like, I'm less interested in this. And then I started going, like, I gotta get ready for work.
Yeah.
So it was still playing, but it was about the time when I realized, like, they are never going, like, even if they set rules for this movie, at this point, it's too late.
Yeah.
Like, because I spent the whole time going, like, how is this happening? Yeah. How is the ship doing this right now?
Yeah.
What does it mean? We're going to talk about a movie later that is by no means like a paragon of like rule setting,
mm-hmm.
but it at least attempts.
Well, and we're talking, the movie that you're inferring is Event Horizon, which
yes,
is certainly more, has more supernatural connotations than this film does. So you can kind of explain it away with, and maybe that's a cheat too, but nothing that happens in Event Horizon makes me scratch my head and go, I don't get that. Like, I get where they're going with all that. This one, there's just so much weird stuff.
They at least
happening.
Give basic reasoning, and then this one does not.
Not really.
And I guess maybe you wouldn't in if you're like stuck in that. And there's a movie coming up we'll talk about in a second that never gives an explanation, and it's fine. The issue is, like, they go out of their way many times to give explanations. They bring in Donald Logue in this movie to give explanations for things that don't matter.
Yeah. King of exposition, Donald Logue. Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty funny, though.
It was funny. I laughed. Now, good cast. I mean, check it out. It's on Netflix. If you've got a Netflix account, it's not that long of a film. You're not going to waste too much of your time. If you like the other Cloverfield movies, honestly, it's worth a look. There's stuff to like.
And I think once we get the whole franchise in, it's going to be hopefully like one that people look back on and go, yeah, that was the stinker of the franchise.
It's going to be the black sheep.
It's going to be the
black sheep. It's going to be the, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Halloween 6.
The Freddy's Dead.
Yes.
Yeah. Because yeah. I don't think it's as good as Freddy 2.
No, it's not as good as Halloween 6 either.
No, it's not. I really want to be nice to this movie, honestly, like, because I've read so much backlash to it. Like, it's getting, like, I got to the point where, like, man, I want to stick up for it.
It's people are being a little too mean,
people,
I think.
Yeah, people are really piling on.
The cast is really good. The
cast is really good.
I can't sit here and tell you all the characters are terribly interesting.
It's like a first-time director. You know what I do like? It's a diverse cast, too.
Oh, it's great.
And it's nice. It's also part of my problem with the movie is you bring in all these characters from different countries and like you set it up as like they're going to work together and they're all just kind of the same.
Yeah, they're not terribly interesting characters. The performances are fine. My issues with this are really on a script level.
Yeah,
has nothing to do with the director or the. In my opinion, it has to do with the script.
Yeah.
I don't think he wrote it. I'm not sure about that. But
no, and I don't even know what the first script looked like. This could be an issue because they just decided to cram it. That's a Cloverfield movie. Too.
No, that's what it was, in my opinion. I mean, all the stuff with the husband character was added after the fact. The ending was tacked on after the fact. The Donald Logue stuff was tacked on after the fact. There's a lot of stuff that I just feel like is weirdly placed in this movie that doesn't quite...
At least watch the ending.
It's funny. I laugh. And I think you and I laugh for two different reasons.
Yeah, I may have misinterpreted what happens at the end.
Yeah.
But I'm in my heart, I'm going to believe it's what happened in the end.
Yes.
And I hope someone else watches it and thinks the same thing I thought, and then they'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But it's stupid.
You thought somebody had a snack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, by this point, I was like 25% watching it. Hey, I ain't getting paid to watch it.
Yeah, that's
in fact, I'm paying.
You know what? You know what you should watch instead of this, honestly, and I hate to be this guy, but I'm going to say, watch Life.
Yes.
I liked Life.
Yeah. I've seen a couple of people diss Life in their review for this movie. They're like, at least it's better than Life.
No. No, it's not. No.
First of all, Life is rated R, so it's automatically better.
It's automatically better. Second of all, no.
Yeah,
no,
I can't agree with this. We're Life.
There's a scene in Life that is so horrifying.
Yeah.
That it outdoes pretty much anything this movie can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not talking about the Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence movie.
No, there was some horrifying stuff in that movie, too.
There is.
It's really dark.
No, it really is.
It gets like...
I rented that when I was a kid and watched it with my parents. I'm like, this isn't that funny.
Yeah, no, it's not. No. I think it ends with... spoilers for that Life. I think it ends with them serving life in prison.
Yeah, they're old men. I think they get out at the end. They get out at the end because they like sit together.
That's nice.
Yeah. And they die.
Probably not long after.
All right, so 10 Cloverfield Lane is not what this is. It's Cloverfield Paradox. Yeah, I mean, if you want to watch it, go for it. If you have Netflix, if you're paying for Netflix, go for it. Might as well. The other movie we watched was a Class of 2017 movie that we just caught up with.
This is one of the ones that was on our poll, I think.
No. Because neither one of us, I had not watched this.
Okay.
And if I would have, it probably would have been one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah.
Happy Death Day.
Yeah.
I really,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really liked this movie.
Yeah, me too.
It's just real. It's good natured.
Yeah, it is.
It's
right?
Sweet. It's good natured while presenting a character that might not be that likable at times.
No.
She's just annoying.
She's honestly, and I hate to make the Groundhog Day comparisons, because this is a different movie than Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It's got similarities, but she's very much like Phil Connors from Groundhog Day. She's kind of an ass to everybody.
She's an ass. She's self-involved, selfish, all those things.
Yeah,
but there is, like, at the core, and she does a fantastic job. The two leads in this are fantastic, because, like, at her core, you're like, oh, I still kind of like her.
You don't want to see her get killed over
No,
and
definitely
over.
Not.
And as you learn more about her, you start to understand maybe how she kind of became so cold to other people.
Yes.
So, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I had a lot of fun with it. I think it continues to prove how impressive Blumhouse is of a studio.
No, I think so too.
Right?
They did it the right way about, because they're releasing. They've been releasing like kind of like cool high concept movies after starting off. They were the Paranormal Activity. But you know what? Even that's a concept movie. I'm wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've always been. I mean, I like them.
They put out the crap, too. I mean,
Do.
I think the Gallows was a Blumhouse.
Yeah.
That was not good.
Yeah. Oh, it's not 100% hit rate.
No. But who is? I think for the most part, they've had quite a few impressive releases, you know, in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah, I'm looking them up right now. But even the stuff that's misses from them, I can see why they would do it in the first place. Like even the Gallows. Like when I saw the trailer and stuff, where I went, "Oh, that looks kind of cool."
I get it, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Like I was kind of sold on it, and then I watched it. It just wasn't very good. Yeah, they did the Paranormal Activity movies. They do the Purge movies. Oh, Dark Skies, that was not good.
Yeah. Maybe not the best.
They do the Insidious. Oh, they did The Gift. But I don't know. Oh, they did Gem and the Holograms.
That's interesting. But I mean, like, Oculus?
Yeah.
They did Whiplash.
Oh, that's right.
The Ouija
so
movies?
They've had movies nominated for Oscars a couple times now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creep. They did Creep.
Oh, Creep 2 is on Netflix, by the way.
They did.
Yeah.
Hush, Mike Flanagan's movie. Split?
Yep.
So yeah, no, I'm a fan. Belko. Yeah, I like.
I usually always check them out. But back to Happy Death Day. It's clever, but it's not too cute. Like it only winks at the audience once or twice.
Yeah, it does.
But it didn't annoy me. It felt like a nice throwback in a lot of ways to a lot of 90s teen slashers.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know, it's just clever. It hit the spot for me.
It gave me similar feelings. It's a more polished film. But it gave me similar vibes to like a Final Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Where I walked away going, that was a satisfying little horror film, but it was also had a lot of heart and mm-hmm. was kind of sweet. You know, it was it's a weird blend. And I know it's not going to be for everybody. Some horror fans are going to be like, ugh, like I don't need the schmaltz, but
right.
I don't know. It worked for me.
There's it's PG. Yeah. So just going into it. No, it's PG-13.
Yeah. And so was Final Girls. Was it not?
I think so.
Yeah. And that's to me that.
It all, you don't, rated R, it depends on the movie you're making.
It depends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're making Event Horizon, you should make it rated R. But, and the other thing I'll say is don't go in having the rules, or expecting the rules of the movie to be explained to you. That's not too spoiler.
Happy Death Day?
Yeah, because I think everybody knows the basic concept right now, which is waking up. It's like Groundhog Day. She's waking up same day over and over again.
Or like Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah.
Yep.
And she's got somebody that's trying to kill her.
And they never really explain why this is happening to her.
No, it just kind of happens.
But yeah.
But I think the rules of her returning every day are explained at least.
Like, yes.
They explain the rules within that formula. They just don't explain why she starts having this happen.
Yeah, they don't explain why, but they explain how she needs to get to the goal of not doing this well enough that it didn't bother me. And I read an interview where he wants to make a sequel that explains those rules. So I think that would be a lot of fun.
Interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty much a science fiction movie.
Wow.
so we'll see.
I mean, if the characters come back, I'm okay with it. Like, yeah, I like the characters.
I think he said he wants to bring the same two characters back.
Cool.
So.
Good.
Yeah, I liked it.
I'm down with that.
So, yeah, Happy Death Day. Check that one out if you haven't already.
Yeah, it's worth a look.
All right. Anything else you've been watching?
No, I think I'm good. Yeah, I think I'm good. Yeah, no, that's the big couple that I checked out. I have rented Mother.
Yes.
Which
yes, we might talk about.
Told me I should not be doing.
Yeah, so you will be watching it with your wife,
pregnant wife,
your pregnant wife.
I just want to say this. She insisted.
Yeah, and I'm going to give everybody a heads up. We're probably once Willie watches this, we will talk about this movie because he's going to need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And then we will probably spoil some things for Mother.
Yeah.
So just a heads up before the next episode, if you want to go in. Knowing what we're going to be talking about, please watch Mother.
Are you sure that's a good thing to just throw out there?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I got nothing else either, but enjoy that.
Yeah, have fun with that.
Willie, we're going to jump in the time machine.
Scoop, boop, boop, boop.
We're in 1997.
Whoa.
I'm 13.
Cool. Yeah. I am 11 years old.
Yeah.
What a statement.
Yeah,
I'm 11.
I don't remember what grade that would have made me in 13.
You would have been in the 7th grade,
okay.
I believe. I think that's 7th grade. Yeah, because you
graduate.
Turn 15 in your freshman year, typically.
That makes sense.
So that makes sense. Yep. Yeah, I would have been just getting out of elementary school, I think.
Okay.
Get ready to go into middle school.
Okay.
Which, I mean, elementary school is a blast, dude.
Yeah, middle school is a weird time.
Yeah, I don't like
it's a weird time. Like, I know some middle school teachers, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you do it?
I don't get it.
Like, that's the worst age to me.
Yeah, because you haven't really figured out who you are yet, right?
No, and there's a lot of things happening.
To your body?
Yeah.
And to other people's bodies. And
you're angry a lot of the time.
Yeah,
and
cliques are starting to form.
You smell. No matter what kid you are, like, you smell. Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah, you spray Axe on yourself to try and mask it, which makes you smell worse.
Yeah, because you do not understand portion control at this point either. So
nope.
You're just bathing in it.
Nope. If you have issues with acne, you're probably breaking out at this point. So that's never fun. Yeah, friends that you might have had, like fun, innocent childhood friendships that you had, maybe like you're starting to not be friends with those people as much because people are starting to like hang out with other. It's a weird time.
It is weird.
It's a weird time, but it's, you know, it can be a good time too.
Sure,
an important time.
It was my first year of being a teenager, 1997.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you want to know what else was happening in 1997?
Sure, yeah. Besides puberty?
Yes. Princess Diana was killed in a car crash on August 31st in Paris, France.
I remember this.
Princess was traveling with her friend Dodi Al-Fayed, who was also killed in the crash, as well as the driver of her vehicle. The vehicle hit a wall after the driver lost control when trying to evade the paparazzi that was following them. After the crash, it was determined that the driver, Henry Paul, was at fault when drugs and alcohol were found in his system. I forgot about that part.
I did too. I remember the paparazzi part.
I didn't even know about the part. Yeah, I remember the paparazzi part. I thought he was just trying to get away.
Yeah, sad. Very sad.
That's kind of the big story from this year.
Yeah, I remember, what's funny is what I remember most about that is I remember them actually showing pictures of the car wreck on the news and thinking that was kind of weird.
It was gross, right?
Yeah, like maybe my childhood memories of it are like...
The whole situation was gross.
Yeah, because the very people that they were trying to kind of get away from are like now...
Capitalizing on their... death in a way.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody killing somebody and then hanging up their body on display as like some sort of weird form of celebration. It was really gross. Even back then, I thought it was gross. And then I remember the Elton John song, of course.
Yes.
Which I believe was a reprise of a song he had already performed for Marilyn Monroe at some point.
The song was written about Marilyn Monroe originally.
Yes.
And then he rewrote it.
For Princess Di.
For Princess Di, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I think he performed it at our funeral.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Nice song.
Yes, Candle in the Wind.
Yes, yep. Still hear it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like Elton John.
So. Yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah. That was kind of the big story. A couple other ones here. Madeleine Albright becomes the first female Secretary of State.
Cool.
First time in U.S. history. Mother Teresa dies in Calcutta.
Okay.
Mike Tyson, this is the opposite of Mother Teresa in a lot of ways. Mike Tyson bites Evander Holyfield's ear during a match and is suspended from boxing.
This is the year of the bite, yeah.
That'll get you suspended.
Yep.
Even for a sport like boxing. You can't bite someone's ear off.
Yeah, he bit him twice, too.
It was crazy. I remember because you would watch SportsCenter at the time. There was no streaming. So, like, when a big fight was going on, my dad and I would stay up late because fights usually start at like 11:30 or midnight.
The main event's always late.
Always late. Yep. And like you would watch SportsCenter, and what they would do is every 3 minutes they'd have their boxing analyst break in with like a round by round update.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden the analyst breaks in. He's like, he's been disqualified. He just bit his ear. And like there's no video of it. It's just the picture of the ring and stuff. And then they show pictures of it later. Because you can't show video from a pay-per-view.
Right.
So they would just show still shots of it, and you're like, oh my God, he's biting his ear.
Do you remember, like, that second ear bite, he tore it.
Yeah, he does it twice, doesn't he?
Well, he gave him a little nibble the first time, and he started bleeding, and the ref's like, dude, that's not cool. You know, like, I'm sure he deducted points or whatever. And then he did it with the other ear, but he, like, straight up bit a chunk of his ear off. Like,
yeah.
Like... And I don't know if you remember, but they were selling, you know where I'm going. They were selling chocolate Holyfield ear ice cream bars.
I do not remember.
They were chocolate ears that had like a cherry filling. So when you bit in, it was like blood. Yeah, I can't make this up. I swear to you.
Did he get a cut of that?
He had to have,
he
right?
better have.
He. I hope so.
I remember thinking, like, Holyfield was in pretty good sport about it. Like, he was, like, obviously upset he got his ear bit off, but, like, he turned it. I mean, he turned it into prop, but he'd made a couple commercials and stuff about it, so.
Yeah, I mean, and they patched things up, which is really sweet to see.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah, and now... We seem to have accepted Mike Tyson back into the mainstream. Somehow he worked it, which some people may be uncomfortable with, but they.
Yeah, I can see maybe, like, I don't know. I can see why people would be a little concerned about just going, all right, Mike, you're good.
Yeah.
But
get a chuckle at him. Yeah. Last story I wanted to touch on because it scared the... Oh, my God.
I'm showing Tim a picture of the Holyfield chocolate ears. These were available for purchase somewhere.
That is something else. Mike Tyson special ears that are okay to bite.
Pretty funny.
But I wanted to bring this one because this was the scariest thing in the world to me. The Heaven's Gate cult commits mass suicide in California.
Yeah.
Remember, they were going to ride... they were done with the earth, like they wanted to graduate to the next plane, if
they
I
were
recall.
Over it.
Google their beliefs. I wish I would have done this before the podcast, but Google their beliefs to just get a better idea of what's going on there. But they they committed mass suicide so they could ride on the Hale-Bopp comet that was passing over Earth.
Yep.
That was their thing.
Yeah.
But the leader of that cult, like when he was on Nightline or whatever they did an interview with him kind of, and like he scared the crap out of me.
Cult leaders are the scariest real life figures to me. And I think it's because of their ability to become kind of chameleons and blend into any given situation the way that they need to get what they need to get. And then they have an incredible knack for picking out people that are vulnerable.
Yes.
And being able to gradually coerce them into doing things that they would not probably normally do. It's a scary thing. The Jim Jones thing, many years before that, it's also very horrifying stuff too. Yeah. Just creepy in general.
David Koresh.
Yeah.
That one.
It's all very spooky.
But there was a really good SNL skit where Will Ferrell played the cult leader.
And the Hellbop?
The Hellbop cult leader. And he called in from on the comet. Like, he called into Nightline, and Ted Koppel was like, hey, we're here with the cult leader. And Will Ferrell's playing the guy. And he goes, I told you so! If I recall, it's kind of just a one-joke sketch, but the one-joke is really funny.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
Music real quick. Wannabe by Spice Girls at number 10.
If you wanna be my lover.
Yes. Yes, not from the Spice World soundtrack, but would lead to Spice World. How Do I Live by Leanne Rimes. I believe the song from Con Air.
Absolutely.
Got you this bunny.
Where he gives her the bunny. Put the bunny back in the box.
Number 8, my favorite song on this list. Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison.
Yeah. Probably used in a lot of movies.
Probably. Number 6, I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly.
Of course. Yeah, well, from the Space Jam soundtrack.
From the Space Jam soundtrack, yes. A movie I saw 3 times in the theater.
I saw The Drive-In.
Awesome.
Oh. Awesome. Double feature with, I think, Power Rangers the movie.
That's sweet.
Great night.
Number 5, Can't Nobody Hold Me Down, Puff Daddy, featuring Mace.
Okay, yep.
Number 4, Unbreak My Heart by Toni Braxton. Mm-hmm. Very saucy video, if I recall.
Unbreak My Heart, yeah. Yeah.
Shower. She was in the shower the whole time. Number 3, I'll Be Missing You by Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, featuring Faith Evans and 112.
Now that was kind of written for Biggie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Number 2, we have Foolish Games / You Were Meant For Me by Jewel. Mm. Number 1, we've got Something About the Way You Look Tonight and Candle in the Wind, 1997 version by Elton John.
Candle in the Wind.
Exactly. For one Miss Diana.
Yeah, beautiful stuff. You know, it's one of those songs where you hear it on the radio and you still kind of remember the reasoning behind it, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice song.
It's a very nice song.
Yeah.
Quite like it. Top 10 movies real quick. The Full Monty at number 10. Did not know that made so much money. Wow. The Fifth Element at number 9. Glad that made so much money. Number 8, Cemetery Man himself, My Best Friend's Wedding.
I thought you were saying Cemetery Man.
No, it was not Cemetery Man. Wait, no, we already covered that. But Rupert Everett, number 8. Liar Liar at number 7. Movie I watched way too much as a kid.
So much.
It's one of those movies I'm sure my parents hate at this point.
My brother watched like 3 VHS tapes constantly, and that was one of the 3.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't. It took me a while to get over and enjoyed the movie again. But
Number 6, As Good As It Gets. Some adult fare here. Mm-hmm. Number 5, Air Force One. Number 4, Tomorrow Never Dies. Hell's yeah, Bond. Mm-hmm. Number 3, Men in Black. One time I played at a basketball tournament, and they would play music over the speakers, and they swear to God, it was like the weekend Men in Black came out. They played that song so much. I hate hearing it.
Yeah. It was also ruined for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were at a sleepover, and it was a friend's birthday party, and I don't know, for some reason his mom or something decided, like, she had activities planned for this birthday party, and one of them was a dance, like a dance competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all going to do our own dance, pick a song and do our own dance to it. And literally every kid picked Men in Black. Over and over and over. And there were like 12 kids at this party. So everybody did their own dance to Men in Black. Most of them were a variation of the dance from the music video.
Yeah, the one with the alien?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was... By the time it got around to me, I was like, I'm good. I'm not going to do this. I'm fine.
What did you do?
I don't... I picked something off the Kraft soundtrack. And then I headbanged to it.
Hell yes.
Kid you not. That is literally what happened.
Yeah. At Universal Studios, they have a Men in Black ride, and they play the song on loop. And I sit there, I look at those employees, and I'm like, you have to be able to zone that out, right? Like...
You would have to. What's worse than the Men in Black? Is that worse on a loop, or is It's a Small World worse on a loop?
It's got to be It's a Small World, because yeah. It's just more repetitive.
It's the ultimate. Yeah. Okay.
I think neither one can be good, though. Mm. Number two, The Lost World Jurassic Park. Then number
one. We're still remaking this year.
Yeah, that seems to be. Yeah. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I thought that trailer looked good.
Me too.
Yeah. And I wasn't crazy about the first one. This one I was sold on.
I hope that Vince Vaughn has a cameo as Dino Terry and Vince Vaughn. Because he's really funny in that. He is fully willing to murder other people to save
a dinosaur.
The dinosaurs. Yeah. It's really funny to me.
And then number one, you're not going to believe it, Titanic.
Yeah. Well, you know. Made I'm pretty sure it was number one money. In 1998 as well. So.
Well, yeah. Yeah, probably. Oh, boy. That song, too.
That... Man, that was a bit much too. Yeah, I think we're seeing the year then that the tie-in song
really took
died.
Off. Yeah.
No, like
well,
this,
yeah,
like this is the peak, and then it dies after this because
both Batman movies, I think. Well, Batman and Robin would come out, and they would have some tie-in songs. But I remember Batman Forever was huge.
Kiss from a Rose, that was the big one off the Batman Forever.
Yeah,
yeah. I think after this, where do you go? When my heart will go on. And Men in Black. Huge music videos, huge movies, huge songs. You don't get bigger than that, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But we ain't talking about Titanic anymore. We're talking about horror movies.
We're talking about a ship, though.
We are talking about a ship. Oh, I had a multiple choice to give you real quick.
Ooh.
Because I wanted to get us acquainted with the other horror movies.
I'm sorry. I went to go segue into a different segment.
What's funny is we've narrowed this down to one movie, and it's still going to be just as long.
You know what? That's fine.
But I wanted to give you this multiple choice so we could like get familiar with the other horror movies.
Because
this might jog your memory a little
bit.
This movie's soundtrack features a song named after the film itself by Master P and Silk the Shocker. Was it A, I Know What You Did Last Summer, B, Scream 2, or C, Anaconda?
I gotta go Anaconda on this.
Wrong.
Okay, so it was I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Wrong.
It was Scream
2? It was Scream 2. You don't remember the video?
No.
It's Master P and Silk the Shocker. They were part of the No Limit Soldiers at the time. They were wearing their No Limit basketball uniforms.
Yep.
And like the video was kind of like one of those like... Juggalo feeling, like it would have like a droopy camera and they'd be coming at it in slow motion and the scream mask.
Wow.
I think the chorus of it, like the hook was like Master P going scream. Which was about the extent of what Master P did. No Limit Soldiers loved their CDs because they were like plastic and had ribs on the side.
Yeah.
And they were always sparkly.
Yeah. They had the best. I had no idea.
Number two, in the film Wishmaster, this horror icon is featured as a statue in a room that Robert Englund's character is in at one point in the movie. Is it A, Freddy Krueger, B, Dracula, or C, Pazuzu?
Oh, man. Probably the Pazuzu.
You are correct.
Yeah.
What's funny is I didn't mark down which ones are right.
Oh, you remembered, though, right?
Yeah.
So far. I Wishmaster's a guilty pleasure for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Wishmaster 2. Wishmaster 2 and Wishmaster TO.
Yeah, Vern Troyer's really good in the first Wishmaster.
The film Relic, directed by Peter Hyams, one of the greats, takes place at the Museum of Natural History in the city. New York, Chicago, or San Francisco?
I think it's Chicago.
You are correct.
I own the book.
Yep.
Have not read it yet. There's a sequel book as well.
Is there?
Oh, yeah, Reliquary. Yeah.
I like that name.
Yeah.
What's funny is the book, the museum is in New York.
Yes, they changed it to
Chicago.
Yep.
In the movie.
I think it was cheaper to shoot in Chicago, and so they changed it to Chicago for that reason. I think that's why. I remember reading something about that at some point.
Yeah.
It's an interesting movie.
I don't dislike Relic.
No, I don't hate it. It's that weird like time when Hollywood was trying to like blend horror with like big budget like Roland Emmerich style stuff.
Yeah.
And you got like Relic and then the one with Treat Williams on a jet ski.
Excuse me, what is that one?
You don't remember that one?
No, what is that called?
It's a Stephen Sommers movie.
Oh, Deep Rising.
Deep Rising. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
And that is Treat Williams, right?
I'm looking at it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because is it Treat Williams and Famke?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but those are similar movies in the sense that they were like these. I mean, even Mimic, I would count. They're almost these weirdly like big budget, like, yeah.
Mimic's Guillermo, right? Yes. Guillermo for hire, kind of. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Next, two more questions here. The Devil's Advocate was originally supposed to be directed by this filmmaker, Francis Ford Coppola, John Frankenheimer, or Joel Schumacher.
You know, I was going to say Scorsese was my original, like before you gave me the options. So I guess I'll go Coppola.
Wrong.
Okay.
This one kind of fits because I believe he did A Time to Kill as well.
Frankenheimer?
Nope.
Did you do Time to Kill?
Schumacher.
Schumacher did Time to Kill. Okay.
And he also did Lost Boys.
Schumacher had a really good career for a while. Like, it's easy to crap on Schumacher.
Because of the Batman.
Because of the Batman thing. And I get that. But when you look at, like, his filmography all the way through, I'm going to pull it up real quick. I know that I'm going off topic here.
No, please defend Joel Schumacher.
But this is important, to me at least. Okay, like, here's his, just his work as a director, okay?
Yeah, rattle them off, I'll tell you.
DC Cab.
Okay, good.
Right? I should say The Incredible Shrinking Woman came before DC Cab.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
St. Elmo's Fire.
Do not like St. Elmo's Fire, but that's just personal.
Sure. Lost Boys.
Love.
Let's see. He did the NXS video, music video movie.
Yes.
That's got to be good, right?
Yep.
He did Devil Inside. Cousins, which I have not seen. That's from 1989. That is two couples go to a mutual friend's wedding and end up swapping partners with Ted Danson, Isabella Rossellini, William Peterson, and Sean Young.
I know of that movie. I've not seen it.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one. Flatliners.
Yep.
Dying Young.
Is Dying Young Mel Gibson?
That was Forever Young.
Okay.
This one has Vinnie D'Onofrio and Julia Roberts. Falling Down
Falling
with Michael
Down.
Douglas.
Falling Down, I like Falling Down.
Me too. The Client.
Client is
Tommy
good.
Tommy Lee Jones. He directed Kiss from a Rose, the music video.
He did.
Yeah. Batman Forever.
Kiss from a Rose, yeah.
Which is not good.
What's that, Batman Forever?
But it's a fine movie for the time.
I like Batman Forever, yeah.
Time to Kill.
Good.
Then he made Batman and Robin, and things start to get a little
bit. Things get dicey.
But even after that, like 8mm.
8mm is at least interesting. Yeah.
I've not seen Flawless. He did Tigerland with Colin Farrell. Interesting war movie. Bad Company with Chris Rock and Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, my God.
Phone Booth with Colin Farrell. Veronica Guerin with Cate Blanchett. He did the 2004 Phantom of the Opera with Gerard Butler.
Okay.
The Number 23 with Jim Carrey.
Oof. Okay, maybe we're...
Yeah, it's time to end.
he did the Trespass movie with Nick Cage, and then he did some House of Cards.
He did an evil Nazi movie with Dominic Purcell, so...
Okay, maybe we should have got out while the getting was good around Batman Forever.
Yeah.
last question for you before we jump in. Behind Scream 2, this was the highest grossing horror film of 1997. I Know What You Did Last Summer, Event Horizon, or Anaconda?
I'm going to go with I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yep. Probably I tried to trick you there.
Sarah Michelle Gellar would be the draw there, I think. Buffy was getting big at the time.
It was post-Scream, too, so that was
that makes the most sense. Yeah. Event Horizon, I feel like a lot of people go, eh?
Event Horizon did not make a lot of money.
Yeah, and then what was the third option?
Anaconda. Which
I think that probably made okay money.
I think they did okay.
Yeah, I mean, they made 17 sequels, so.
And I think the second sequel's a theater sequel, so it made enough to get a non-direct video.
One of them's got Hasselhoff, right?
Boof. Probably.
One of the Anaconda movies? Okay.
Probably.
I think so.
Or it might just be John Voight playing.
You like the part where the snake pukes up John Voight.
Yeah, I've told you this. I've never actually seen Anaconda all the way through.
I know.
I've only seen clips.
I know.
Because I can't watch.
Can't do it.
I can't watch snakes.
Have you seen the bit where he gets thrown up by the snake?
Yes.
And he winks?
Yeah.
It's really funny.
He's winking a lot, that movie.
Yeah.
Determined John Voight is a crazy person.
He's nuts, yeah. You think you could watch it now, though, because the CG is so bad?
No, I can. I've lightened up on snake stuff. Like, it was because I loved the Indiana Jones movie. I loved it as a kid, but I was like, I have to cover my eyes. That one part with the snakes.
Yeah,
I can watch that now.
Okay,
I've grown up, and I can handle
That's
it.
Good.
I can watch snakes on the plane if I want.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I still don't like them, though.
No, you don't have to like them.
I'm not a fan, but I'm not as terrified of them. That's Tell you good. What I was terrified, though, as a young man. Event Horizon.
Yeah. You kind of picked this movie.
Yeah, we had, for the next couple weeks, we wanted to pick movies that were like near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah.
And Event Horizon is. And it's not because I think, I will not sit here and defend Event Horizon as one of the all-time great horror movies.
Sure.
I don't think you can do that. I can defend it as a movie I love, though. Mm-hmm. And I can defend it as a movie that was very important to me because 1997, I was, 13 years old in 7th or 8th grade at the time, one of the two. Whenever this came out, because I think I would have been in both at the time. But either way, I was going to a lot of movies around then.
Sure.
And you were like, it was like a big time because like it wasn't just like you and your friend going to the movies. It was like a co-ed group movie thing. Like this is big stuff for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was going to, like, I could go to rated R movies too because all you had to do was have a parent rate at the Gaylord Cinema.
That's awesome.
And my parents were pretty good at knowing what, like, they weren't going to, like, if I was like, hey, let me go see Showgirls or Striptease.
Wasn't going to happen.
They were going to be like, no, you're not going to do that. But hey, let me go see some people get filleted in Event Horizon. They're like, go for it.
No problem.
Go
knock
nuts.
Knock yourself out. Yeah, we weren't. The parents' note, I don't think, to my knowledge, didn't work down here. We had to do the buy a ticket to something else.
Buy a ticket. We did that a couple times too. Like when I went and saw Sphere, which is not this year.
When you went and saw Showgirls, you had to do.
Yeah, I had to go. I think I bought a ticket for the Pallbearer.
Okay.
Probably.
Did you just say you snuck into Sphere?
Yes. Yeah. The 1998 Sphere. Yeah. Sphere we snuck into, if I recall. Is Sphere rated R?
I don't know.
It better be because we snuck into it. We bought a ticket for something else and we snuck in.
That's incredible.
Sphere is awful.
Sphere was borderline unwatchable.
It's one of those movies, even when you're a kid and you don't have the same type of judgment. Like
sure.
You're not as good at judging things as you are now. It's even one of those movies like where halfway through I'm like, this is terrible.
It was so bad. The only thing that was cool about it was I think there's a scene where Queen Latifah is attacked by jellyfish.
Yeah, that part's really
That's kind of funny.
That's really good. But here are some of the movies. Like I remember being in the theater mm-hmm. to see some of these. Scream 2, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that was a big event.
Did you see the first one in the theater?
No, I did not. I caught up
Same
with the first
here.
One.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Devil's Advocate. I went and saw in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah, Pacino goes all in by the end of that.
Devil's Advocate is fun.
It's
fun.
His hair is like all over the. He looks like Bill Murray at the end of Kingpin. Like his hair is like all over the place. It's so sweet.
Al Pacino knows exactly what kind of movie he's making.
Mm-hmm.
The Game.
Oh man.
Yep. Austin Powers.
Sure.
The Lost World, Con Air, Titanic. Yeah, everybody saw that. Liar, Liar, Tomorrow Never Dies. Good Will Hunting I saw in the theater.
Really?
Yeah. It came out like later on, if I recall, up there because
yeah.
like it had like an Oscar thing and then it had a second life. Hercules, the cartoon.
Sure.
G.I. Jane, which I actually got in trouble during.
With, Ridley Scott's movie.
I was with a bunch of immature children, boys, young boys.
What did you do?
They were cackling anytime Demi Moore would do a push-up. like girls can't do push-ups.
Oh my goodness.
And like so like the theater owners came in like, you laugh one more time, you're gonna get kicked out of here.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would never laugh. Even as a 13-year-old, I was more mature than that.
Yeah. Do any of the laughing.
One of the movies, I don't even know if we were laughing at the screen half time. We were probably just.
Last time I watched, I laughed at Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, he's kind of funny, you know?
Yeah.
That's fair.
He's ridiculous.
Yeah. But one of the movies I saw, and I remember, was Event Horizon.
Yes.
And it was post Jurassic Park, and I was a huge Jurassic Park fan, and I loved Sam Neill's character in Jurassic Park.
Amazing.
Like, he was my guy. Still is.
Dude, yeah. Like,
you're a Dr. Grant
fan? Oh, 110%. Like, most of the kids I knew were like, Malcolm's the best.
Yeah.
And Malcolm's great. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But Dr. Alan Grant is a hero.
Yeah.
Like, if I met Sam Neill today, I would be like, have a hard time not gushing because of that character. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I'd have a hard time not like looking at him and seeing Alan Grant.
Yes.
So yeah, big fan. Inspired me to want to be a paleontologist.
Right.
Which I'm not.
Inspired a generation of kids to not be paleontologists.
To want to be paleontologists, then realize that that is a horrific job in a lot of ways. at least for me. But
so yeah, I knew he was going to be in this movie because mm-hmm. he was all over the marketing, and I was getting into horror movies at the time because this was post Scream, and I kind of said Scream is kind of one of my gateway movies. So I saw this movie, and I was also kind of getting into science fiction at the time too, and like it was kind of a perfect storm of things.
That is, you, yeah. So you saw warm and fuzzy Alan Grant.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I knew him from nothing other than that at this point.
So in your brain, in your teenage brain, this was Alan Grant.
I knew it was going to be a horror movie. I knew it was going to be kind of scary. But I did not know where this would go. And I bring that up because I watched it in the theater and it freaked me the hell out. Like the last 30 minutes or so of this movie, when we go into what he becomes, what he turns into, it scared the living shit out of me. And I went home. I couldn't sleep that night. And maybe for being a 13-year-old, I should be tougher, but I was not.
No, I get it.
Because this is kind of my first exposure really to that kind of stuff. And like, I think my parents were like, man, boy, he's not sleeping well.
But this movie's like Hellraiser level stuff.
No, it is. Yeah. And because there's even some like orgy stuff happening at one
yes.
point. And that's kind of shocking. But it got so bad, like it freaked me out for the longest time. And then it would play on HBO at like midnight. And like it would be out the next summer, and I remember as a kid, there are two things I would flip past. One was in 1997 when the Heaven's Gate, the cult guys. I was just like, I can't watch that guy. He freaks me out too much. And the other was the last 30. Like I knew when the movie would come on. Like I would have the HBO guide, and I knew when the movie would come on, and I would flip past it as fast as possible. But there was always a part of me that like flipped past it, and, mm-hmm. like glanced at it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. So that's why this movie, like, that's why, like, when we decided to pick movies that are important to us, that's why this movie popped
up. Well, it had an actual, like, impact on your young brain there.
Right.
Yeah.
And
wow.
It does what a horror movie, I guess, should do in that, yeah, it freaks you out and it scares you, but, like, there is part of me, like, has always been drawn to this movie.
Sure.
Because of that. Even, like, when I was, like, avoiding it, actively avoiding it late at night on TV, there was a part of me that was like, man. Because I remember, like, not saying like, oh, I hate that movie. It was just like, whoa, like that movie messed with me.
Yeah, no.
Willie, what is your experience with this movie?
I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it on Tate on VHS at some point, and it freaked me out too. I remember thinking, I don't know if at this point I had seen Hellraiser. I think I had, so I was probably a little less, which is ridiculous to me that I saw Hellraiser when I was like 10 years old. Yeah. My parents didn't realize, just a heads up, they did not know I had watched Hellraiser. Because I think I've mentioned on the show before, I used to sneak out of my bedroom and I'd turn on cable and then I'd sit in front of the TVs, like right in front of the TV, so I could turn the volume down to like the lowest possible and still hear what they were saying and stuff.
Yeah.
So at like 3 a.m, I'm sitting there watching Hellraiser by myself, like Carol Ann and the Poltergeist, like staring at the TV. It's a wonder.
This is interesting to think about, like as we're... You're going to be having a child soon.
Like, if I woke up in the middle of the night and I walked out and my 10-year-old kid was sitting on the floor staring, like, face almost up against the television and watching Hellraiser, I would be concerned for them. Like, I would be...
Yeah.
My parents never caught me, so...
Yeah, yeah, they don't know about it. But.
No. No, but I'm pretty well-mannered. Anyway, no, so this one I don't think had quite the effect on me that maybe it did on you in terms of being, like, disturbed by it. Still, there was some imagery and stuff in this that messed me up. For some reason, there's two images that stuck in my mind that legitimately are always ingrained in my brain. One of them is the woman following her ghostly son and falling splat onto the...
Mm.
Something about that still freaks me out. I don't know what it is. It's just... It's something about... I think now that I can like contextualize it as an adult, it's something about a force that is so malevolent that it's willing to toy with somebody like that.
Right.
And then kind of laugh in their face. Like, literally, the little boy, I think, comes up to her and like smirks at her afterwards, like, haha, dumbass, like, as she's bleeding out. It's really rough. The other one, for more obvious reasons, is the Jason Isaacs death. And I remember that it was twofold, because there's the bit when he's initially cut by Sam Neill, and it's just a close-up on his face, which is scarier than actually showing him getting chopped open. That then you just get into gore, right? I mean, that, you know. But hearing the knife cut through him and then seeing just like a close-up of his horrified reaction, that's scarier to me. It still works better to me. And then the aftermath where he's hanging up flayed open. And it goes by so quickly that I remember going, oh my God, what was that? And you get such a fleeting glimpse at it that your mind plays tricks on you almost. Now with the power of HD and being able to pause, you can pause it and kind of see the cool practical effects that went into it. But at the time, seeing it on VHS or seeing it on cable, it was a lot harder to do that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you just see this flash and you're like, holy crap, that's a dead body. Like in your mind, you almost believe it. The only other time I remember having an experience like that early on like that was Lord of the Flies.
Okay.
The 90s one, I believe it was. It was a remake of the original film. There's a scene where a kid gets killed, and I remember like they show you a flash of the aftermath of his body, and I remember just that image being still creeps me out. Anyway, but I remember that, and I remember Sam Neill. I think this was my first Larry Fishburne movie, so I remember liking him quite a bit coming out of it.
I was a big Lawrence Fishburne fan.
Yeah,
like because this movie. And I remember watching Boys in the Hood with my dad.
Okay.
And like thinking like Lawrence Fishburne's cool as hell.
No, he is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's bouncing back a little bit. He's kind of getting cool again.
I've always liked Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a little bit there, I was tiring on Fishburne, I'll be honest. Larry Fishburne was...
He kind of fallen into a trap.
Well, he was making some weird career choices. I remember that. I think the pinnacle of it for me, where I was like, okay, I'm over Lawrence Fishburne, was Predators, the Robert Rodriguez produced Predators film, where he shows up for like 5 minutes.
Oh God, he was in Nightmare 3
and does nothing. And yeah, he is Nightmare 3. I think he's an orderly.
In Higher Learning. That was one I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a big John Singleton fan as a kid.
Sure, who wasn't? I remember running all of John Singleton's movies in one go.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just really wanted to watch some John Singleton movies.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
Back to Event Horizon. Sorry. It's a good cast.
Yeah, yeah. This is my first exposure to Larry Fishburne. I thought he was a really good like leading man, kind of the hero of the film.
Yes.
The closest thing you get to a hero, certainly. I had seen Jurassic Park previous to this, so I remember seeing Sam Neill like you and going, oh my God, what is happening to Dr. Grant? Why is he doing this? Because by the end of this movie, he's naked. And bald.
Yeah, you don't get to see... I don't think you see penis.
No.
You see a sack, like you see a bulge.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's essentially naked. And he's running around bald with like weird satanic symbols carved into his skin.
He's basically turned into like a Hellraiser, like a Cenobite.
He's like a... Yes.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to chase around Larry Fishburne on this ship. Freak me out.
Yeah. It's kind of nuts.
No, it's insane. And actually, when you boil down the plot, like, look, this movie didn't quite age as well.
No,
as
I do want to say that. I'm not scared by this movie anymore.
No, no. There are cool images.
I think there's spooky, too.
There's kind of gross imagery, certainly.
The imagery, the set design really hold up.
It's top notch. Yeah, and I think the overall look of the film works.
Yeah.
Nothing in the film doesn't work necessarily. It's just, I think my memory of the movie is much stronger than the actual film.
There's one thing I want to point out, too, before we... this is a movie, and it gets crap, and I would probably give it crap a little bit for cribbing from other better movies.
It does.
Because it cribs from The Shining and Alien and Hellraiser,
sure.
Solaris, stuff like that. So it takes a lot from those movies. And a lot of people threw that at The Void last year, and it's fair, and I totally get it. And if I were to watch this movie today, I would probably think the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're a 13-year-old kid and you have not seen some of those movies, this is a pretty good gateway into other stuff. So I want to stick up for a little bit, because I almost think sometimes old Paul W.S. Anderson's movies are kind of aimed at 13-year-old kids. And this one worked really well on a 13-year-old kid.
So success. yeah, you know what I like about this movie, the basic, the when you boil down the plot to its basic kind of root concept, I like the idea of, and I don't think enough movies or stories do this, and I think the reason for that is that it's a slippery slope and it's tricky to kind of blend the two, but this movie does a really good job of blending science, even if it's pseudoscience, and the supernatural. There's kind of a neat job of that, and I think that that's like a testament to the script. It kind of, in the universe of the film, it kind of takes the idea of hell, right, and makes it just an alternate universe, another dimension, right?
There's a tangible quality.
There is a place that you go, that you can physically go to if you have the technology that is a representative of, that is a representation of hell. And that's interesting to me. I think it's interesting. The Doom games did this. That was kind of the plot of Doom. I don't know if you remember, was that you're a space marine and the portal opens through experiments and then you find a portal to hell and whatever. But I don't know if that was an inspiration. I know, obviously, Paul Anderson is a big video game fan. He's done a handful of video game movies. So maybe that was a little bit of like an inspiration for the basic story. But I like that. I like the concept. I like blending, if it's done carefully, blending science and fantasy. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Magic and science. You know, like the Thor approach, kind of, you know, like trying to take the two things and maybe kind of, you know, and I think it works in this movie. There's something really jarring about seeing, ghosts and, you know, satanic imagery and possession type stuff and that kind of religious undertone. There's something interesting about seeing that on these elaborate spaceship sets. Because in horror films, you're used to seeing that kind of imagery and that kind of story in like a decrepit house, right? Like that, like a spaceship is not where you're used to seeing that kind of story told. You're used to seeing it, you're right? Like Amityville, like that's So I like that. I think it's cool. I think it's unique to this movie for the most part. I think Event Horizon is worth a watch still. For sure.
Especially if you just watch Cloverfield.
Event Horizon's better.
It is.
It is better.
And I didn't come out of it going like, man, yeah, Event Horizon is an unheralded classic. No. Like this classic. It's a fun 90s science fiction horror movie.
It is.
I think it's still cool to look at. I love the design of the core itself. Mm-hmm. Like if they put out a statue of that.
Yeah,
they may have. So if someone knows, I'll Google it after. I would buy it,
like a paperweight that's shaped like it.
Yeah, and then people be like, "What's that?" I'm like, "It's the core from Event Horizon." Please.
Don't be stupid.
Yeah, the big flesh ripping orgy still worked for me.
That and once again, the reason why it works is it's like chaos with restraint.
Yeah.
It's more. They really don't show you much of it. I mean, they don't. You get a sense, essentially, a series of images and sounds that are kind of scrambled and jumbled. But it's enough for you to go, "Oh my God, were they doing what I think they were doing?" Because they're like having sex, but also like eating each other, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's pretty messed up. It's putting a big budget.
Horrifying stuff. I mean, it's like. Society, borderline society level crazy. Maybe not that crazy.
No, not that crazy, but honestly, yeah, for a big budget movie.
It's bold.
In the 90s. Yeah, it's pretty.
It's bold. And my guess is there's a lot of that on the cutting room floor, and it's probably for the best.
He has talked about there being a director's cut. It's every time it comes up, then he goes, "I don't know where to find it," or like everything is destroyed or something. So I'm almost thinking like he's lying.
I think it will be found at some point.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever truly lost, I swear.
Right.
It's
someone's
out there somewhere. Much older, harder to find movies have been discovered and restored than Event Horizon.
He might
be
holding off until he gets some heat back.
And maybe then he can.
He's gotten worse, right? He was never a master. I'm not going to say that. But this is. No. I like this movie. I like Mortal Kombat.
But I think he had potential for a while there. And I mean, he's been very successful. Don't get me wrong. What he does has made money, and it's coming under budget and on time every time. So good for him,
mm-hmm.
right? However, I guess to me, coming in under budget and on time are kind of like the base levels of filmmaking, right? Like that's like achieving, you know?
Right.
I think what happened was...
Nick is going to kill me for not mentioning Soldier.
Yeah, so he made Soldier. There you go, Nick. But yeah, I don't know. I think he kind of gave into some of his base instincts as a storyteller. And I think he fell too much into the I want to make a music video / video game and not I want to make a film.
Mm-hmm.
And he started getting offered stuff that... Things like Alien versus Predator and...
The Three Musketeers.
You know, stuff that, like, I get why you would take it, because...
Pompeii,
yeah. Pompeii is good, though, because it's got Kiefer Sutherland as a Roman centurion, so... which you still have not watched. You need to make that happen.
You can find bits of joy in most Paul Anderson
You can.
Movies.
And he's made the occasional...
I don't dislike the first Resident Evil.
He made the first Resident Evil is fun. Death Race is fun.
Mm-hmm. I might not.
The first Mortal Kombat's fine.
Yeah, I liked the first Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
yeah. He didn't do Annihilation, right?
No, he did not. We don't have to blame him for that one.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you hate Paul Anderson, it can get worse.
Yes, it can. I don't know. I mean. For a while there, though, I think there was almost a promise with Paul Anderson of being maybe like a James Cameron light.
Okay.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. You know, like, I don't know.
He was the guy that was going to take, like, after Mortal Kombat, he was the guy that was going to take, like, video game or video game style movies and give them, like, into the mainstream.
Legitimize them, right?
Yeah. No, I get that. So, yeah, I don't know where I am with him, but I still like this movie. I think it's one of his better movies.
Yeah.
And I think there was a lot of 90s sci-fi horror around this time. We got like Species, Alien Resurrection, Deep Rising, Mimic, Count the Faculty, Sphere. You know, Sphere?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I know Sphere.
I think this is probably...
It's one of the better ones.
I think it's one of the better ones. Yeah. I like... out of those, I probably like... This I like Deep Rising quite a bit, even though
Faculty's
good. Yeah. The only ones I really don't like are Spirit, Alien Resurrection.
I do want to rewatch Deep Rising. I want to say that right now.
Okay,
that's something I want to rewatch.
Mark that one down.
It's really gross, if I remember.
Yeah, that's probably Stephen Sommers' best movie.
You think so?
Yeah. What it would be better, The Mummy?
The first Mummy's pretty entertaining, I thought.
Okay.
As kind of an Indiana Jones esque with a little bit of horror element.
It's better than G.I. Joe. It's better than Van Helsing. Oh, you know what? He did the Jungle Book, he liked, didn't he?
Yeah.
You like that Jungle Book?
I rewatched that, and it doesn't quite age as well either.
That's a bummer.
So.
But that's Event Horizon, and that's 1997.
Yep.
In a nutshell. Willie, do you want to tell the good people what we're doing next episode?
First, I want to show you, and I'm sorry, audience, that you can't see this, but if you go on Amazon and search for Deep Rising, you'll see a Blu-ray set. It's a double feature. And the lead picture on it is this beautiful picture of Treat Williams with an assault rifle and a shotgun. It's wonderful. Yeah. So we're going to continue on kind of this format that we did tonight. And we are going to, on our next episode, talk about one film. And I have chosen the film kind of for the same reasons that Tim chose Event Horizon. It had some sort of impact on me for one reason or another. And I will be choosing 1954's... Alfred Hitchcock film Rear Window, starring Jimmy Stewart.
The farthest we will have taken the time machine back.
Yep, we're going way back. Definitely a different film than Event Horizon.
Yeah, I mean, Hitchcock is not as good of a director.
No, clearly not as top-notch as Paul Widescreen Anderson,
yes.
But still an accomplished director in his own right, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Made a few decent films.
He would also be obsessed with his leading ladies, much like Paul Anderson.
Yeah, except for Paul Anderson actually got to have sex with them. I don't think old Al ever,
right.
ever made it happen. But he might have. Who knows? I will not speculate. But regardless, Hitchcock, obviously, huge name in thriller, mystery, suspense, later on horror films, and Rear Window is one that, though obviously very well known, I don't think quite gets talked about as much as maybe your Psycho or Birds or even Vertigo. No. So I am excited to talk about it. I'm a big Jimmy Stewart fan, too.
I love Jimmy Stewart.
Big Jimmy Stewart fan. So if you've never seen The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, it's absolutely wonderful. It's him and John Wayne and Lee Marvin. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. But that's a Western. We're here to talk about horror movies, and Rear Window is a horror movie. So very excited about that. We will not be doing the remake made-for-TV film that was weirdly insensitive and starred a paralyzed Christopher Reeve in the Jimmy Stewart role.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, a lot of people did. It was weird.
It's best for everybody.
Made me uncomfortable, I'll be honest. Yeah, anyway, so if you've got anything you want us to talk about alongside Rear Window, by all means, throw it out there.
Yeah, you don't got to say, like, cover this year anymore. Throw out a movie if you want.
Throw out a movie.
Yeah.
Now you can just say, hey, I want to listen to you guys talk about this movie.
Yep.
And we'll probably do it.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Check out the other podcasts on the Midwest Podcast Network, Westworld FM, Alienist Recap, and the Midwest Game Nerds. We'll be back for the next episode of Rear Window. Until then, bye-bye, man, and woman.